I'm going to call the Environment, Natural Resources, Policy, and Finance Committee to order, members. A quorum is present. On the agenda for today, we got first up two sets of minutes to approve, similar to what we did Tuesday. The meeting of February 24th, and then also the meeting of April 10th. There was an error. We're just going to address that in the April 10th minutes, which are there in your packet if you want to review those. And that they had previously been approved, so we have to reapprove those. No big deal. We'll get through that. In case you see something, just let us know, and we could address that. Yes, Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we're approving the Thursday, April 10th, and Tuesday, February 24th minutes and in two separate motions?
That's correct.
Awesome. I move the April 10th minutes if you're ready for a motion.
We could go ahead and do that. The motion is to approve the April 10th minutes. Members, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Representative Purcell, if you'd like to move the minutes from the February 24th meeting.
So moved.
Members, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The agenda for today, we have to hear one bill. I see that the bill author is already at the rostrum. Then we're going to go to DNR and the Office of School Trust Lands on a number of reports that were due to the legislature. One, the outdoor recreation endorsement. The other one is crossbow use. We all are eagerly anticipating that particular report. And the last one, the recreational use of school trust lands. And that will conclude our agenda. So we'll just go ahead and get started. So Representative Swiezinski, I'll move your bill since you're not a member of the committee. I'll move that House File 624 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. And if you would like to present, you're welcome to.
Thank you, Chair Heintzman, Chair Fisher. It's an opportunity to come. Thank you for that before your committee once again. House File 624 is a pretty straightforward bill. Our goal is to increase opportunities to put fish in the lake, but also fish in the live well. And House File 624 foundationally works to drive money towards fish stocking by giving an incentive to use to purchase walleye stamps. And as part of that incentive, you get to use a second line in the summer and four lines in the winter. Currently, I think the Minnesota sells approximately 15,000 walleye stamps for the 1 million to 1.5 million fishing licenses that are sold throughout the state. I believe it generates about $90,000. And those dollars are dedicated and used for fish stocking. And our goal is that we could incentivize the purchase of walleye stamps so that those dollars can be generated, the revenue used to stock fish in all 1,000 or 10,000 lakes here in the state of Minnesota. That's what the bill does. It's very straightforward. You know, revenue estimates, you know, it's really quite interesting. If you chat with the folks at any hardware store, which I've had a lot of conversations about that, a vast majority of fishermen that I've talked to have shown interest in it. And obviously, we all know the same issues that we're dealing with across all of our sporting activities, whether that's hunting or fishing. The average age of the average fisher person is increasing. And so what can we do to dynamically change and get young people off their devices and back onto the lakes by the boat or on shore? And that's having success. And the success that we can give them is, one, have better opportunities to have fish in the lake, which the stocking efforts would do that, but also giving them opportunities to maybe potentially even shrink the time in which they do to catch their limit. There's been a lot of conversations across the state to move the walleye limit from six to four fish. And really, when you're looking at how do we get young people dynamically interested in a sport that can potentially take all day, is potentially shorten the time in which they can actually have success and maybe reach whatever limit that might be. This bill is not, this is ambiguous to limits, but it does play a part in actually having success. And you ask any person that's been fishing, including most of yourselves that have been out, if you've had success, the most likely thing that you're going to do is go fishing again. And that's what we're trying to do. And I think this opportunity, this really gets the conversation back on the water and puts us, quite frankly, in line with other states. South Dakota, North Dakota, I believe Iowa, I believe Wisconsin, all allow you to use multiple lines. And this would give you an incentive. You know, the current walleye stamp is $5. There's been some conversations that we could potentially even increase that to generally increase the amount of revenue because of increased interest to folks that would be interested in purchasing it. Whether it be $10 or $15, I think we would be able to drive a significant amount of dollars to fish stocking across the state. That's the bill. And I stand for questions.
Members, I think that we're going to have Pat Rivers come up, and we'll just hold questions for a minute and hear from DNR. Deputy Director, if you'd like to introduce yourself, that'd be great, and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Thank you. For the record, my name is Pat Rivers, Deputy Director for the Division of Fish and Wildlife at the Minnesota DNR. I want to thank the author for his interest in getting people out fishing and especially shortening that time between bites. That's a goal we both share. I want to say to start off that we're very fortunate in Minnesota. I serve on the National Fish Habitat Board, looking at doing good things for fish habitat across the country, and we're a bit spoiled in Minnesota. Our fisheries are really based on the fact that we have great habitat, water quality, and natural walleye reproduction, as well as other species. So that's what drives our fisheries in particular. In terms of House File 624, we do have some concerns about this bill, especially related to the enforceability of how we would need to confirm whether somebody had that endorsement or not, and how that relates to party fishing. This bill will increase fish mortality directly through anglers keeping more fish, and indirectly through hooking mortality. That's when you throw a fish back that's been caught, but it subsequently dies because it's been injured. Many lakes, including our most popular large walleye lakes, have special regulations that limit the sizes of walleye that can be kept to improve the size structure in those water bodies. Some of the large lakes are near their sustainable harvest levels. Increasing harvest and mortality may mean that the overall fishing mortality exceeds what's sustainable over time, and fishing quality will decline, actually. This is not just about walleye either. Designated trout stream lakes and those supporting lake trout may need to be revisited for their limits and their seasons to prevent over-harvest. This bill will also put additional pressure and catch on our muskie populations, where trolling and live bait fishing has become increasingly popular, as well as the use of things like forward-facing sonar, which takes those hidden fish and makes them available to the angler pretty in a way that really hasn't been available before. This bill will also increase pressure on harvest on lake sturgeon and catfish, which are managed primarily as a trophy fishery. And there's more I could say about other species as well, but I'll stop there and be available for questions should you have any. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Members, any questions? Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Rivers, could you kind of, you mentioned enforcement. Could you explain how this enforcement would be any different than any other enforcement the DNR?
Director.
Mr. Chair, Representative Burkle, if you have a party that's fishing and you count seven lines, you need to figure out who's got that extra endorsement. So currently we all know that if somebody's using two lines on the water and there's one person in the boat, that person's fishing illegally or with too many lines. So it means that you need to check everybody in that boat. Our enforcement officers brought this to my attention. So that's the biggest issue. It's just the fact that you've got multiple lines and you need to go to that boat and find out who has the endorsement and who does not.
Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Wouldn't the enforcement officer be checking if they have a license anyway?
Director.
Mr. Chair, I didn't hear the question, sorry.
Representative.
Mr. Chair, wouldn't the enforcement officer be checking whether or not the folks in that boat have a license anyway?
Director.
Mr. Chair, Representative Burkle, you're correct, but this does make the enforcement more complicated by having to check to see who has an endorsement for that second line.
Representative? I think Representative Gilman.
I want to make a comment really quick and thank the author for bringing this bill forward with the intent to get more folks out to enjoying the properties that we, the lakes that we have, having the experiences and the memories that I've made fishing with my grandpa and using sweet corn on the end, and just the memories that I have on the boat with him and the experiences I had because we were catching the fish. Now, if I was just there hanging with my grandpa, watching him smoke lucky strikes, I don't know if it would have been as much fun, but we found all the cool spots, and I'm grateful. I think it's going to be great for figuring out ways we've made a lot of investments into fisheries and just into, you know, supplying the stock, and after things have happened with fish kills around our state the last couple of years, this is a really creative way to not only bring more memories forward, but bring more money in. So thank you for your support.
Representative Gottfried.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks to you both for being up here today and for bringing the bill forward. I also have many great memories of fishing with my grandfather from my youth, and I you know, it's a great, great activity. The question that I have would actually be for, you know, our individual from the DNR here. I just want to make sure that I understand the concern about the stress on the fish and the fish populations. Is the current concerns, because as far as I understand it, that this does not change the limit to the way that how many walleye somebody can catch, but is the concern then that somebody could catch, you know, over their limit and then return a number of walleye back into the water to get to that limit, but then those walleye are then injured because of the hook, and then they perish in there, thereby like further distressing the population of walleye within a particular body of water. Is that one of the primary concerns pertaining to the walleye specifically?
Director Rivers.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's just about the added pressure and added mortality that will happen with this regulation. If I'm out trolling on Woman Lake in Cass County and I've got two lines out, it's very likely that I'll catch more fish than if I just have the one. And certainly as I throw more fish back, if I'm catching and releasing, there will be more hooking mortality. So it's the additive nature of that mortality that has us concerned.
Representative Gottfried.
And then ostensibly, it's literally the other concern about some of the other fish that you mentioned is catching strays, so to speak, of you know, maybe accidentally putting, for the same concerns, you know, putting pressure on other fish populations that may also be in trouble. Is that correct?
Director Rivers.
Mr. Chair, Representative, not even just in trouble, but just rather just the sustainability of what we can harvest. I used to be the large lake biologist for Leech Lake, and I believe the sustainable number there was somewhere in the neighborhood of 200,000 pounds. Increasing the number of lines that are in the water will increase that harvest over time, and that we question whether we can sustain that level.
Representative.
Understood. Thank you. I appreciate the explanation. Thank you all.
Representative Falconer.
Yeah, thanks. I like anything that's going to get kids outside hunting, fishing more regularly. This seems like it has the potential to do that. I guess one of the things, and I guess main concern, you know, just looking up, you know, you mentioned Lake Sturgeon. Just did a quick 19 of the 20 lakes that have them are, or anyway, they're threatened and endangered in Minnesota. So kind of that, the unintended consequences to me is just, you know, kind of a small concern at least. Would you consider looking at it sort of like deer hunting zones of if there's a set of lakes that are where walleye populations are already like decreased to a point where it's not sustainable, or there's other threatened endangered species there, like we wouldn't do the two line there, but you could somewhere else, or if tribes have specific concerns near the reservation, that's gonna harm their rights to hunt, fish, gather. Just kind of thinking, if not so much in a statewide sort of way, but taking more of a zone by zone approach, sort of like deer hunting.
Deputy Director.
Mr. Mr. Chair, Representative. That's an interesting idea, and one of the things we like to have are rules and regulations that are simple to understand. And when we start slicing and dicing so that anglers need to look through a encyclopedia to figure out what's legal and what's not, so that would add to complexity. It is a way we could deal with, say, things like designated stream trout lakes. We could say that it's not allowed on those lakes as one example, but then you're adding another layer of complexity. But yes, you could do that. Representative.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, to me as a deer hunter, you know, you get the book, you flip through it, you see what zones are. I mean, I don't see that as an onerous complexity issue if somebody's really, you know, trying to go by the book and be responsible. I feel like if we can try to figure something out that's going to make sense, get kids active, sell some more stamps, but also retain the rights of tribes and make sure the populations are healthy, if there's some way that we could find some consensus in that sort of lane, I see that as, you know, potentially workable.
Not seeing any more questions. Representative Swazinski, if you'd like to have some closing comments.
Thank you, co-chairs. Thank you, members. I appreciate the opportunity to present the bill. I am open. My door is open when it comes to this conversation. I think whether it's focused on a specific species when it comes to stocking, whether we could spread it out amongst a group of species when it comes to not just stocking walleyes, but potentially impact other lakes that might be impacted because of this. But at the end of the day, you know, DNR said it itself. What will this potentially do? It might give you a chance to catch more fish. And we're not hiding that fact that you might actually catch more fish, but also have better opportunity to catch fish by having more fish in the water. So thank you. Appreciate your time and would willing to work with any one of you to help improve this piece of legislation. So thank you.
Thank you. And members, I renew my motion that House File 624 be laid over. The bill is laid over. Next up, we have DNR Outdoor Recreation Endorsement Report. Commissioner, it's great to welcome you back to the committee today. I think it's your first visit in 2026.
It is, so. Mr. Chair. Thank you so much. It's good to see you and Co-Chair Fisher and all of the members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sarah Stroman. I have the honor of serving as the commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. With me is Ben Berge. Ben is our regional director out of Bemidji, our Northwest region. We're really pleased to be here today to present the legislative report that we submitted to you all on the outdoor recreation endorsement concept. We are really optimistic about what this concept represents for the future of funding for conservation and outdoor recreation. Thank you. Okay. So this initiative was something we started back in 2021. Minnesota DNR began an initiative that came to be known as For the Outdoors. It was intended to be a public-facing, with a lot of engagement with Minnesotans, transformational effort to think about a long-term, sustainable, equitable funding system for outdoor recreation and conservation. We had an opportunity to do a lot of collaboration with partners in the conservation and outdoor recreation community, along with members of the Minnesota public, to talk about what do they see as the vision for conservation and outdoor recreation in Minnesota, and what are some of the strategy and steps that we could take to achieve that vision. So throughout the engagement with those leaders in the community, as well as members of the public, as well as our own DNR staff, there were kind of four things that we heard from folks that were kind of issues or concerns that they hoped we could address through this effort. One was a lack of investment in conservation and outdoor recreation, and the idea that this lack of investment stresses resources that Minnesotans value. They hope to see additional investment in natural resource management, recreation infrastructure, staff, as well as technological advancements that would benefit Minnesotans. Secondly, they noted a lack of shared stewardship and shared responsibility for conservation actions and recreation resources. And by this, what they meant was that some communities and interest groups pay for conservation and outdoor recreation access, but that all Minnesotans benefit, whether they are direct users or not. And so they felt there was an opportunity to create better alignment between our funding system for conservation and outdoor recreation with the broad economic and other benefits to Minnesota. Third, they noted that funding restrictions and a lack of predictability limit the ability to successfully meet our conservation and outdoor recreation goals, and that more certainty, more regularity around that funding would allow Minnesota DNR and partners to be more nimble, more accountable, and to plan and manage more in line with our natural systems and the infrastructure lifespans. And then lastly, they noted that there is not likely a single silver bullet. We're not going to come up with one funding source that is going to do all of those things, that the challenges we face in both conservation and outdoor recreation are varied. And so we will probably continue to rely on a funding system that comes from multiple places and has some complexity to it, but that there was still opportunity to look at other areas. So the engagement, though, I want to note importantly, went beyond just these concerns, right? It was more than admiring the problem. We also, with the public, created a vision and a strategy. So through this year-long engagement process, we created a vision for the future of funding in outdoor recreation and conservation, and there were four guideposts to that vision. First, that future generations benefit from sustained and improved outdoor recreation experiences and the conservation of natural resources. That forward-looking piece was really important and prominent in the feedback we got. Second, that Minnesotans work together to support diverse outdoor recreation opportunities and conservation of our state's natural features. So this was really important from the public, that it's not one group, like hunters work for hunters, anglers work for anglers, park people work for park people, bicyclists work for bicyclists, but that we need to work together broadly so that the whole entire system is supported. Third, that conservation and outdoor recreation opportunities equitably meet the needs of all Minnesotans, better aligning access. And finally, that conservation and outdoor recreation align with and are integrated into Minnesota's state priorities. So this they meant by recognizing that time spent in the outdoors achieves health goals. It achieves education goals. There's lots of benefits from being outside. So guided by this vision, and again, with that public engagement, we developed, this is where the outdoors comes in, four steps in 4 years that we can collectively take action on to secure that sustainable, stable funding for natural resources and outdoor recreation. Those four steps are optimize the use of current funding, increase opportunities for direct support, explore the use and application of fees, and then secure stable and predictable base and operational funding. We are working in all four of those areas. Today's focus is really on that last one, the stable and secure predictable base and operational funding. And the specific opportunity here is the outdoor recreation endorsement. So since identifying those four steps, we've continued to hold in-person workshops and online engagement opportunities to collaboratively develop specific proposals and actions that fall under those four steps. The outdoor recreation endorsement is one of the ideas that emerged from that engagement process as a solution for more stable and predictable funding, while also reducing costs for Minnesotans and increasing access to the outdoors. So as we began to develop the framework that was in the report we submitted, we were really fortunate at DNR to have an expert in this kind of model in Ben Berge, who as a previous parks director for the state of Wisconsin, had some experience with this model. And so I'd like to turn it over to Director Berge to talk more specifically about the framework for this model as it's described in your report.
Mr. Berge.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members. As Commissioner mentioned, my name is Ben Berge, and I'm the regional director for Region 1 based out of Bemidji. We're really excited to explore this model a little more with you today, the outdoor recreation endorsement. Quite simply, the endorsement is a way for Minnesotans to support DNR's recreation and conservation work across the outdoor recreation system while lowering costs to gain access to our state parks and recreation areas. Quite simply, the model is based on the purchase of the recreation endorsement at the time of vehicle registration or renewal. The decision to purchase is part of the annual vehicle registration, as I just mentioned, or renewal. The example that you see up on the screen is actually from the state of Michigan. Michigan enacted such a model similar to what we're exploring back in 2011. And so there's quite a few years, about 15 years now, that Michigan's been very successful. As you can see, the reason the model works, the commissioner mentioned lower costs than we currently have. And that's based on the fact of how many people get exposed to the opportunity to purchase and to learn about our outdoor lands here in Minnesota and the benefits that they provide Minnesotans. And so currently we have just over 400,000 vehicles that are registered here in Minnesota by either a day pass or an annual pass to a park or rec area. We have just over 5.4 million vehicles that would be eligible to buy. So if you think of roughly passenger vehicles. And so this model puts that opportunity to purchase in front of all 5.4 million registrations or renewals. And so the model's worked on finding a low price point that is attractive to folks that, you know, either have visited one of our outdoor spaces or maybe have interest but have never taken that opportunity. And so it's putting in front of each time a car is registered or vehicle in order to make that decision. And participation is as simple as checking a box. So what are the key benefits of this model? And we've really wanted to make this unique for Minnesota. There's other states that have tried implementation of a outdoor recreation endorsement. It's called something different in every state. But we wanted to make sure we were being specific to Minnesotans and the needs here in Minnesota. And so I mentioned significantly lower cost than our annual park permit. Currently, a park permit is $35. You're going to see in a current slide here, we're looking at cutting that roughly in half of what people currently pay. Easier and more convenient. We want to make things easy for folks. It is, you know, our responsibility as state government to try to make things as simple and as straightforward as we can for people here in Minnesota, and to provide benefits such as our outdoor spaces. I think we can all think back to the last 6 years and how natural resources and outdoor spaces have become a staple in many, many people's lives, benefiting both the mental and physical health. And so we want to make this easy and convenient for people to get outside. We often hear a lot of complaints about those sticky park stickers. I've been in the parks and I see some nodding heads. I've been in the parks and rec business most of my career up until recently, about 25 years. And I think I've heard complaints on sticky park stickers for 25 years. And then the last thing is, this is a way for Minnesotans to help support the maintenance of our impressive outdoor recreation system. We have incredible state DNR managed lands here that people from all over for different reasons enjoy. And we obviously, that fourth pillar the commissioner talked about, stability and funding, is very important for us to continue to provide those services. So that's for Minnesotans. What about for the outdoor recreation system? This, as I just mentioned, helps us with providing some stable funding so we can start to proactively think about and meet trends, as we know trends in outdoor recreation are evolving fast. And then also, the important here is this isn't just a parks model. And so this outdoor recreation endorsement isn't just a park pass. It's a way to support the outdoor recreation system and the work that it takes to maintain that, while also gaining access, free access to our state parks with the purchase of the endorsement. So creating the Minnesota model, we talked about attractive pricing. And so the thing that's really important to note here is that the price of this endorsement and the price of our other permits is extremely critical, because This is somewhat you think of as a business principle of, we want to drive participation to this. It's very economical compared to our current pricing, and we want to encourage people to participate. The other thing that is really important to this is that it's integral to the car, the vehicle registration. So that would include kiosks, registration through deputy registrars, mail-in, and car dealers. And so it need to be included in that entire process. And I think the most important piece here, the last piece I'll just paraphrase, is marketing, right? We need to make people aware of the resources that this state manages that are there for their benefit. And so marketing is extremely important to get people aware and aware of the opportunity to get outside and enjoy Minnesota through DNR managed lands. The next slide talks a little bit about the purchase options that would exist. And so the outdoor recreation endorsement we've talked about, it happens at the time of vehicle registration. We would also look to sell an on-site endorsement. We know not everyone would click that box when they register their vehicle. And so we'd also be able to sell that endorsement on-site. And then another thing we've heard through our commissioner mentioned all the outreach we did, that we would have a non-resident state park permit for both daily and annuals. And this is very common. Especially to the states to our east, where I came from in Michigan, or I came from Wisconsin, but also east end of Michigan, having a non-resident sticker and a slightly higher price. In all of our outreach, we did hear support for that. Not too much, because we obviously don't want to prevent people from wanting to come to Minnesota, but there was support from our constituents to slightly increase those fees. Our next slide looks at the pricing structure. The ORE, I like to call this a $19 outdoor recreation endorsement. You see 15 on the screen and you're going to say, why? And so thinking about how we encourage participation, we would discount that price from the onset. And so very typical to you see how other things, you know, if you think of subscriptions or other things that come on, you discount that price to encourage participation early on and to gain participation. And so we would be fully implemented by year five at $19 on the ORE, but start at $15 for year one and two, 17 year three and four, and then on to 19 by year five in full implementation. That on-site ORE would have a $12 additional fee, so you can see that it follows that fee schedule to full implementation at year five, and that's based on trying to encourage people that next time they register their car, to check that box and opt into that. And then you can see here the permit fees we propose, $15 for a non-resident daily and $45 for a non-resident annual. I do want to note that just recently, Wisconsin just increased their daily across the board to $15. I had actually done that several years ago when I was a director there at a few parks. And they just did that across the board now in Wisconsin last year. So this would also put our fees a little bit more in line with our neighboring states. The next slide talks about agency roles. I think one thing we can be really proud of here is that state agencies trying to work as one Minnesota. We've been collaborating on this for over a year, working with Department of Public Safety, Department of Corrections, the Deputy Registrars, and DNR. And so the important thing here, I won't go through each slide because I know we've been up here a while, but each of us would have a role in this. And so from updating the registration system with DPS to sales through deputy registrars, auto dealers, to commerce, fulfilling things they currently probably are aware of, fulfill your vehicle tabs. And so they'd have a role in this. And then obviously DNR, making sure that money's getting invested back into the things that Minnesotans expect on their public lands. But this encourages collaboration among state agencies, as I said, illustrating how a one Minnesota approach can benefit Minnesotans through process simplification and reducing fees. Projected revenues, here you'll see year 1, 3, 5, and 10. And so we give you a little bit of a snapshot looking out of over time. Just to put it in context, we currently and state park passes bring in, depending on the year, between $8 and $9 million. So you can put this in perspective that we would hope our predictions look like we would slightly increase in year one. We'd want to at least break even, but our predictions show that we'd be significantly over that. And then looking out to year 10. And so I want to make sure that I leave the impression that this model takes time to build to that full implementation and that full potential of revenue collection. I'll give you a little example. Michigan over tripled their revenues in the last 15 years by going to a model similar to this. And so they over tripled their revenues. And our last slide here, I think, really gets home to the important values of what we're trying to do. First, obviously, replace and augment existing vehicle permit revenues to the state park system. That is first and foremost in terms of, we know that the park system would lose the ability to sell annual stickers to Minnesota licensed vehicles, and so we need to offset that. In fact, augment that sum. And so it's not just replace, it's replace and augment. Second is investing across the system, not just state parks. Also, obviously, it would include state parks, but our WMAs, our aquatic managed areas, scientific and natural areas, our state forests. So across that landscape. And then third off, obviously there's some administrative cost to implementing the system. And so the system would have to pay for itself. I want to leave you with a couple closing comments around this. As I just mentioned, the outdoor recreation system is more than parks and trails. We all know that. State wildlife areas, as I mentioned, aquatic management areas, state forests, and forest rec areas, and to mention our scientific and natural areas. While these administrative designations are important inside the Department of Natural Resources, in general, these administrative boundaries are not important to Minnesota's recreating outside. It is common within the same day for an individual to camp in a state forest campground, hike in a state park, and use an aquatic management area to go fishing. Providing a consistent quality outdoor recreation experience across all DNR managed lands is our responsibility as public land managers. The outdoor recreation endorsement model creates stability and funding across the outdoor recreation system while also providing the flexibility to adapt to changing outdoor recreation trends that we continue to see on our landscape, setting the Department of Natural Resources up to be successful in meeting the needs of Minnesotans in the future. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, we're happy to take any questions.
Members, I think we have a couple already, but looks like we have a couple more. We'll start with Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Chair Heintzman. Thank you for being here. Interesting model, and Mr. Berge, we talked about this image a while back, but I kind of found the answer as I was reading through this, but can you confirm, we were talking about opt-in, opt-out when we were in Bemidji last. This is opt-in, correct?
Yes, we are looking at this model as an opt-in model. And I'll explain what that is just so everyone's aware. An opt-in model is dependent on, at each time someone registers a vehicle, they have to make a decision to check the box to opt-in. An opt-out model would be, if you don't check the box, you automatically get it. And so some states do have opt-out. Minnesota thinks that an opt-in model gives each individual person registering car the ability to make that decision.
Representative Merkel?
I'm good, thanks.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you both for the presentation. So in our packets, we were also given the report itself. And so I was looking on pages 11 and 12 of the report, so sort of the very bottom of page 11 and the very top of page 12, about, it's under the section called Investment in the Outdoor Recreation System. And you've got these proposed percentages for this revenue source. And because we don't know exactly what the dollars will be, it makes sense to have the different percentages. I'm wondering both, how did you come to these percentages? Is this currently kind of, if you were to take the total income, is this how this cost is already broken down? And then I would love if you can introduce or kind of like go more into detail about, as you've been noticing, you know, changes in how Minnesotans are using our outdoor spaces. Would you need to come to us to change these percentages? I just want to know more about kind of that allocation inside the program. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Or Commissioner?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Purcell, great question. So the percentages that are in the report are our best recommendation to you all of how we think the revenues from this could or should be divided amongst the various units of the outdoor recreation system. So how we derived them was first to recognize, like right off the top, we need to replace the revenue, as Director Berge said, that we currently get for state parks. We're not going to leave our parks with a hole in revenue. So that's the first. The revenue on top of that then, we've proposed these percentages, and we came to them basically by surveying each of the divisions that administer these lands in terms of if you had the funding needed to fulfill the responsibilities on your land, kind of on a scale from like minimally fulfilling them to fully fulfilling them, what would that cost, do you think? And based on each of those cost estimates, the low and the high, that we got back from those land administering divisions, we turned those into percentages then. And so it really represents the percentage based, like the footprint that the managers managing these lands now think it would cost to minimally or fully meet the services on those. What you also see then is we have talked about that last percentage, that 4%, to have some agency discretion for. We don't want to call it like a slush fund or a discretionary fund, but is to address kind of those urgent issues that might come up that aren't anticipated in percentages, assuming the legislature chooses to put percentages in statute. I don't want to presume that's what you do, but we do think the agency should have some amount of flexibility to address things that come up more urgently where we wouldn't have time or capacity to come back to the legislature to address.
Representative Purcell.
One follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. How do these percentages compare to like the current spending and the way that we allocate the dollars to the DNR overall? Thank you.
Commissioner.
Yeah, great. Mr. Chair, Representative Purcell, I'm sorry, I forgot that second part to your question. So they don't fully compare to that because for state parks and trails, right, they currently have funding revenue through the vehicle permit system. So we can calculate that. Wildlife management areas get money from the Game and Fish Fund to manage those. Areas like a state forest get appropriations from the legislature for forestry. Our scientific natural areas don't really have general fund support right now. A lot of the funding to manage those actually comes from the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. That's part of the problem of stable, predictable funding as we come back to the legislature through that grant process. And so that's partly why we think this model is so incredibly important, is it does create some stability and predictability across the system so that we aren't picking sort of winners and losers in the system based on history, but that we're valuing them all with some amount of funding in a consistent way from a single source.
Representative Falconer.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you both for coming. Kind of following up with Representative Purcell's question, I'm just wondering if you could maybe step back and paint an overall picture of the current onerous but sticky stickers and how the funding that goes for, like, say, state parks. As I was quickly scanning through this, it looks like for this to keep state park funding, we would need additional funding. And if I'm reading this wrong, please let me know. But a little bit north of $9 million a year just to keep that up. So I'm just wondering, like, if there is that imbalance, how do you see that going in the future? Like after the 5-year, 10-year projections, are we going to be like, you know, surplus of that? Or, yeah, so I guess two parts. How are the parks or other things funded? Does money get shifted around to various components? And how much go to, I'll just stick with parks. And then with this new plan, how much are the parks going to get? Are we going to see a deficit for what they can expect? Or are we going to be able to get back toward that and maintain it in the future?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. So hopefully I got your question correct. So parks are currently funded primarily through park pass sales, campground revenues, a little general fund. Look at Commissioner. I'd say in general, that's our basic
legacy
fund, right? Legacy fund. But those four are basic, the foundation of parks funding here in Minnesota. And so the $9.3 million represents the replacement and augmenting of the parks account where those state park stickers now go. That would be a lost opportunity moving forward. We wouldn't be selling park stickers. We wouldn't be selling annual park stickers to Minnesota licensed vehicles. And so that $9.3 million that you see is off the top before any of those percentages are even considered. And so maybe that's a point of clarification here. If we only made $9.3 million, there wouldn't be any money for the percentages you see on the bottom. And so that's where we place that as a priority for the revenue from this money. We have to replace that. In fact, slightly augment that from where we're at today. And then you asked the question moving forward. I think that's a question for a later day. You know, 10 years from now, you know, there may be a discussion around, is that a right amount, you know, that base, is that right 10? That's not something we can answer right now. Obviously, that'd be working with a future legislature and something we'd work with to better understand at that time.
Mr. Chair, if I might just add to that, so what you saw...
you can.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Faulkner, just to augment Director Berge's question. So there's that $9 million. You'll see in our year one projection, we're at about $11 million. So as he said, not a lot in the first year above that to distribute. In the out years, we do get a balance. And then that's where we'd apply these percentages. You'll see the very first percentage is 45% to the Parks and Trails system. So they are getting a very large footprint of that additional revenue, partly as a reflection of all of the complex infrastructure that is there. And then I think, as Director Berge said, down the road, if we feel like those footprints are changing and these percentages merit, again, assuming this moves forward and assuming the percentages get put in statute, we would need to have a conversation about that. But that is the idea, that parks get made whole, but they also get a percentage of the additional revenue.
Members, before we go forward, I'm just going to mention we have two other reports. We have Nelson up, Fisher, Warwas, Jacob, Representative Faulkner.
Thank you, Chair. Very short. I guess just the last question, if there was a deficit, you know, it's going from 35 to 15 or something like that, it's kind of a drastic change, so hopefully, you know, it's not that much. But is there a hierarchy for which programs get fully funded, get cuts, or just what's the programmatically, what does the budget look like in the face of a deficit if we move to this new plan?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Faulkner. So the percentages, if it's still enhanced revenue, if we're still above that $9 million, the percentage, right, there's just less dollars because the percentages would be there unless we came back and changed them. If it's truly a deficit, we're below that $9 million, then you'll see in the report we've talked about, we need to have a fallback system too, where we'd have to then go back to a different system because we can't, if this doesn't fly, we can't leave parks with a budget hole.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think this is an interesting model. I'm intrigued. But I'm kind of wondering, you've talked some about going away from a sticker, but maybe I missed it. What is the, would there be a sticker that's on the license plate now instead of the windshield, or what replaces the sticker?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you for the question. And so the question was, everyone I think heard, what would the sticker, or what would indicate that someone paid for that and be able to gain entry to our parks and rec areas? And so what we've been working with DPS and corrections has been on what that looks like. And so the simplest way to think about it is to put some sort of symbol or some recognizable symbol, I guess is the simplest way to say it, on the existing year tab. And so it could simply be a little P in the corner. It could be a little outline of the state of Minnesota. It could be a star. It could be many things. And so just a very simple thing that would be on that. And so you wouldn't have anything extra on your vehicle. It would just be a simple way for people to identify who paid for it. And I'll give you the Michigan example. Michigan added a P to their plate. And so their year tab has a P on it for those that buy. They have what they call it in Michigan. It's called a passport, a recreation passport. So they use the letter P on their yearly tab.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you for that. It's still kind of a sticker, but there's the year sticker, so it's, you're going to have to be putting those on annually anyway. I think we just heard from talking about the fishing licenses, you know, of the challenges of a stamp and, you know, the added enforcement. And, I mean, I don't know how big the P is, but the stickers aren't very big. And I think that... I don't know. Maybe it's not a big deal, but I know when I go to the best state park in Minnesota, the St. Croix State Park, probably like every other one, you pull up, you stop, you know, whether if you have a sticker, you just pull up, and usually they wave for me inside. They see that you've got the sticker in the window, and you go on. And so I don't know if they're going to have to change anything else, or if that's more of going to be an enforcement action of you pull in and you don't have the P sticker on your vehicle. Well, then there's an enforcement, but. Not sure how that changes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, thanks for that. I'll make a question out of that, I think, in terms of what would change. There really would be no change. So currently we have the stickers on the windows and we have enforcement. We give courtesy notices and talk to people about getting, you know, paying for that pass. And so I can tell you that, you know, in Michigan, there was no real enforcement change. It's just a different place to look. And so there's a training component to from looking from the windshields to the plate. But we don't see that as a big deal in terms of enforcement. And part of our hope with this is, you know, we really look at education as our, you know, tool of enforcement. And so that marketing piece of this, the hope is that so many people participate in this that just a lot of cars have it on it. And so we would look for our enforcement efforts to actually be less than they are today as more and more people prescribe to this.
Chair Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Heintzman. A couple of questions. Am I, first of all, understand correctly that if people have the endorsement, it would be a sticker on the front and back license plate?
Director.
Mr. Chair and Chair Fisher. Yeah, so wherever you have a year tab on your plate today, that year tab would include that.
Okay. Very good. And then, Chair.
Thank
you, Chair Heintzman. Next question is I have is when you're talking about the needs of each of the different divisions, one of the questions I have is when you're taking a look at the parks needs, I've been so frustrated over the years of seeing buildings and things fall in disrepair and then eventually have to be taken down. Was that taken into consideration as we're looking at how this breakdown was going to be happening so that we could not be in that situation again where we could take care of not only the day-to-day needs out there, but making sure that we don't have our infrastructure continue to decline?
Commissioner, I don't know if you have the number of deferred maintenance dollars that are needed right now in front of you, but I know it's in the hundreds of millions, so that's a great question. I'm glad it's being raised today.
Yeah, Chair Heintzman and Chair Fisher, I don't have that number for Parks and Trails specifically in front of me, but it is large. What I will say is we did take that into account in that low, high, kind of what's the annual need. This will not fully cover that. I want to be honest. It is not going to replace what we fund out of legacy, what we fund out of bonding. This price point would have to be much, much higher if we were going to fund all of the deferred maintenance on DNR facilities across the state. Will it help? Yes, we believe so, because it will be that maintenance dollar, which is our hardest dollar, as you've heard us say many times before. And so, you know, there'll be some of that. Hopefully it will help stem some of the deferred maintenance growth going forward, too, if we're better able to keep up on it.
Okay, thank you.
I appreciate that answer, Commissioner, and it sounds like Chair Fisher's satisfied. I'll just ask further, since I am wondering if that means that there will be no more or significantly less asked for, say, bonding for those kinds of things.
Chair Heintzman, I do not anticipate an appreciably lower request for bonding. Our capital asset needs are large enough where this is not. And it's, as you see, it's going to take some time to come online as well. So I honestly do not see that declining appreciably.
Good to have that information. Representative Jacob.
Thank you, Chair Heintzman. So I'm just not quite 100% clear on the idea of this would be that it would replace the sticker system that we're putting in the windshield currently. But for people who opt out and then they decide they want to use the park, the window sticker system still has to exist, right? And in addition to that, for people who come in from out of state.
Commissioner or Director?
Mr. Chair, Representative Jacob, thank you for the question. So the first part of the question was for the people that don't opt in and they show up at a park or rec area and they need to opt in in what I call an on-site ORE, we would still have to have a sticker for those folks. We would expect over the course of time that would be significantly less people would be purchasing through on-site because of the cost savings difference. And so that's why we're proposing that $12 basic increase in charge on site to encourage people to buy it at registration. So correct. And yes, the non-resident would still be a sticker. Correct. Okay.
That's Representative Orwas.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Director and Commissioner, for being here. What would, you know, we talked about, like, your slide showed, you know, about DPS needing to do work and corrections needing to do work, agency roles and responsibilities that would come up because of this. So what do you feel the timeline would be to implement the new system approximately?
Director.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative, thank you for the question. So timeline, as I said, we've been working for over a year with the other state agencies. And we, as we work on looking at that, we think earliest possible for implementation would be that January 28 would be, we'd like to implement on a calendar year, and we think January 28 would be a feasible time for implementation if it's so decided by this legislature to move it forward.
Okay. Mr. Chair, and thank you. That answers the question.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, Minnesotans love their outdoors. We've proven that at the ballot with constitutional amendments over and over and over again. But I think at some point, Minnesotans ask, we've voted for this on the ballot. We voted for the outdoors on the ballot over and over and over again. And there's something that happens with time is that we forget things that are created. So 15 years ago, we created a natural resources asset preservation account and bonding, so we wouldn't have to be coming back for it. But we get new members, and we forget about that, and there's other priorities, and but it still exists. Everybody's talking about stickers. We created a state park license plate. We have it right now. You can go buy one right now. You don't have to put a sticker on. You can go buy a state park license plate. We passed it, I think, in 13, and it didn't get implemented until 16 because there was opposition to it. And then we had a contest, and then we have the state park license plate has the only yellow brick road S-shaped fishing dock on the planet trying to sell that. So it's not, I don't begrudge anybody for not knowing that it's a state park, but that license plate allows you to get in to the state parks right now. 2 years ago, we passed a law telling the DNR, not asking, telling them to change the license plate so it'd be better. That hasn't happened. So I think, you know, Minnesotans get confused because every legislature creates something and funds something. So we have SNA accounts, we have the wildlife management accounts, we have legacy accounts. We created a whole thing that didn't exist after legacy of grants to local parks. Maybe we can't do everything all the time, everywhere, anymore. Maybe we can't. Maybe we should just do the state stuff. What if the stuff that was going to local parks goes to the state? Maybe we wouldn't have to keep asking for new. In MnDOT, they have a turnback program where they're like, we can't handle this road anymore. Local government, do you want to take it back? And the local governments do and agree to take over it. So I get people saying our license plate tabs are too high already. I get people are like, what are we doing? You know, we've got legacy, I've got LCCMR, people vote for it. Maybe we should look at restructuring or reforming or something. Because I think if we do this, it's going to lead to more confusion of, okay, what are all these different, how many accounts do we have for DNR? A lot, right? I mean, we could spend the rest of this meeting going through each of those accounts. So I don't begrudge the work that's been done. I think that Minnesotans are concerned about the cost of things right now. And they want us to be smarter, us to be smarter. And that maybe is too much to ask. But I think we've got to figure some of this stuff out on the long run. So this is a long-term proposal. I'm just not sure it's the right thing we should be doing at this time. I'm not sure the public is right there right now. I think if we did some reform or restructuring with it, They might be. I made it simpler, made it clearer, made it more transparent. They might be. So I'm just throw that out there. I know you've involved people. I know that you have the stakeholders and the public meetings, but I don't know. We're all out there meeting people right now, and I'm not sure we can sell this.
Representative Hansen, you're taking me back to some of my old speeches. You're freaking me out a little bit. we're to the last question, Representative Finke.
Had I known, I wouldn't have joined the list. I just have a quick question to you. Who manufactures the park stickers? Like, where do you get the park stickers, and how much do those cost?
Director.
Mr. Chair, Representative Finke, I can't answer who it's contracted, but that is contracted it out. And I'm going to have to, I don't have that today. We can get you that information for what the cost of that is. Yeah. But we can get that for you.
Okay.
Representative Finke.
I just want to make sure that when we're thinking about the, like how much money this is going to make or not make, like you pay for those stickers. I presume they are made by a company that pays employees. And it sounds like the solution to this is to use slave labor in our prisons where we make license plates for 50 cents an hour for those labor. So that's not even a call out. We do this all the time. I just literally want to know how much money are you saving? Are you thinking about that savings? And is that being taken into account?
Director.
Mr. Chair, Representative Finke, thank you for that. We're going to have to get back to you on costs of sticker production and who that is. And we'll get that back to you.
Thank you for your presentation. Members, I didn't anticipate as many questions, so we might have a little bit tighter timeline on the next presentations, but good discussion. And
thank you.
Appreciated everybody's comments. So next up, this is going to be the DNR crossbow report. I should have said eagerly anticipated, as I said earlier. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Barbara Keller, and I am the Big Game Program Leader with Minnesota DNR. I'm also serving as our temporary legislative coordinator for this session, so this is the perfect nexus of those two roles. I'm here today to discuss our report on the use of crossbows and the effect on our deer populations. As you may recall, in 2023, this legislation was passed and included instructions for the DNR to conduct an analysis on the effect of crossbow expansion to any archery deer hunter on specifically our deer populations in the state. We did opt with this report to include our wild turkey populations because this change did extend and affect our spring archery turkey seasons. The data that we used to conduct this analysis included license sales data. It also included harvest registration data. In 2023, we added a question to our harvest registration for deer and turkey on the archery season licenses, asking hunters whether they used a vertical bow or a crossbow to take their deer or turkey. So that was very important to this report. However, we don't have information prior to this change in 2023 on the number of hunters that were already using crossbows because that was allowed for hunters that were age 60 or older. We also don't know how many deer or turkey were already being taken with crossbows. So we did have a gap there in knowledge, and we attempted to address that with the use of a survey that was sent out to deer and turkey hunters after the 2024 season to help us, again, assess that, how many hunters were already using crossbows, how many were new hunters because of that change, as well as assess wounding loss between those two weapon types, success rates, as well as opinions about the change allowing crossbows.
I do want to point out some limitations of this. This only includes 2 years of data. So keep that in mind as we're talking about and going through the results. Hunters probably didn't find out about this change until they picked up the 2023 regulations booklets, which come out in August, and our deer season begins in September for archery deer. So they only had a month prior to archery deer opening. They may have not decided to run out and pick up a crossbow. They may have also been aware of the expiration date associated with this legislation. So that may have affected their decision whether they wanted to spend the money to purchase a crossbow without knowing whether they could continue to use that weapon into the future. Jumping right into the main results of the study, we did not find evidence that the statute change expanding crossbow use had any impact on our deer or turkey populations during those 2 years. We did find that this change may have positive benefits to recruitment and retention efforts, particularly among youth, older age hunters, and female hunters. You may be looking at that older age part of that questioning, well, hunters who are already over the age of 60 were already allowed to use a crossbow. However, perhaps those hunters that were younger than 60, maybe between the ages of 40 and 60, may feel physical limitations of using a vertical bow. And so they may be now, instead of having to wait until they reach the age of 60 to pick up a crossbow, they are now, under this regulation, able to do so before that happens. So that might have benefits for retaining those hunters in the sport before they reach the age of 60. This figure shows our license sales for our archery license from 2012 to 2024. The top line represents adult licenses, and then the line, the gray line at the bottom, represents youth licenses. You'll see there that we did have a bump in license sales that you can see pretty clearly for our adults. That occurred in 2020. That's an effect of the pandemic. We saw an increase in use in all types of outdoor recreation due to the pandemic, and certainly that extended into our archery deer and turkey participation. But then you'll see a slow bleed from that peak into 2020 until 2023 when this expansion occurred, and we did see an increase in license sales for both adult licenses and youth licenses. You can see there the average increase was 6.5%, but we did see higher increases that second year in 2024. We also saw higher increases among the youth. You can't really see it in that line there, but we did have 8.5% increase in youth licenses in 2023, and then a 13.3% increase in 2024. And we saw even higher increases among our female youth. That was a 43% increase in youth license sales for our female compared to a 10% for our male youth. But what we're most interested in as far as the effect that this change had on our deer populations is whether it affected deer harvest. And we did look at our total deer harvest, and that's the most important, the total number of deer that we're taking in any given year. And we did not see any change that we could attribute to the expansion of crossbows on our total deer harvest. In fact, we had a slight decrease in our total deer harvest, 10% the first year and less 3% the second year. However, we did see archery deer harvest increase, a 2% increase in 2023, which is very minor, and that's within the variation that we would typically see in any given year, but a 32% increase in archery deer harvest in 2024. We don't think that 32% increase in 2024 is solely attributed to that expanded use of crossbows. We found that that increase was due to the increase in antlered buck harvest during archery deer season. I will say, in 2024, we had the latest opening date for our firearms deer season that we can have in a year, and that was November 9th, I believe, in 2024. In 2023, it was November 3rd or 4th, and that's just due to our normal calendar rotation of opening dates of firearms deer season. That meant that our archery deer hunters in 2024 were able to hunt the deer rut more than they usually do, and that leads to a higher antlered buck harvest, generally higher archery harvest when that occurs as well. So we believe that that played a role in that higher archery harvest in 2024. I have no doubt that crossbow expansion also played some role in that, but it wasn't solely attributed to that. And we did see both an increase in crossbow and vertical bow hunters in the number of antlered bucks that were taken. Looking at the differences in deer taken, the sex and the age class of deer taken by the different weapon types, so we're looking at crossbow and vertical bow, across both of the years, we didn't see any difference in selection from our hunters, whether they were using a crossbow or vertical bow. They were taking about the same types of deer. And even more so in 2024, you can see those numbers for adult males were exactly the same between crossbow hunters and vertical bow hunters. However, we did see that we had a higher proportion of hunters taking deer with crossbows in the second year compared to the first year. So that was 43.8% in 2023. That increased to 48.2% in 2024. Again, hunters are probably learning more about this change. They're hearing about other people hunting with crossbows. They've had longer to think about it. So no surprise that we're seeing that increase, and that's what other states have seen as well. I expect that it would continue to increase if we continue to allow this expanded use of crossbows. We also saw that hunters were more likely to successfully harvest a deer using a crossbow if they were youth or older age hunters. So these two figures show the age distribution of successful hunters during the archery deer season. The age is on the x-axis of this graph. The green line represents the number of deer taken with crossbows by each age class, and the blue line represents vertical bows. So if you look at the very left-hand side of that graph, you'll see the green line is above the blue line for our youngest aged archery hunters. They are more likely to take a deer with a crossbow than a vertical bow. Then that switches over, and vertical bows tend to be where most of our archery deer hunters are, what most of our archery deer hunters are using until about the age of 50 or 60 in 2023. It was a little bit later of about age 60, we see the hunters are more likely to have successfully harvested a deer with a crossbow. But if you look at 2024, that shifted a little bit slightly to younger. So it looks to be about age 55, we're seeing more archery hunters more likely to take a deer with a crossbow. Again, we asked in that survey what percentage of our hunters were already using crossbows due to that age allowance, or we also allowed disability permits to be obtained and found that 21% of archery deer hunters were already using crossbows prior to this expansion. We did also see that female archery hunters were more likely to have successfully harvested a deer with a crossbow versus a vertical bow, so 64%. Of deer that were harvested by archery, female archery hunters were taken with their crossbow compared to 46% by male archery hunters. We did want to pay particular attention to those deer permit areas in our state that are classified as antlerless lottery permit areas. These are areas where firearms deer hunters have to enroll in a lottery to get the allowance to take an antlerless deer. Otherwise, they have to take antlered bucks. However, in those areas, archery hunters can take an either sex deer. They don't have to enroll in that lottery. So we were concerned that hunters, if they were moving from firearms deer season into archery season because of this allowance, we might see a higher take of antlerless deer affecting the deer population. We do tend to implement the antlerless permit lottery in deer permit areas where deer populations are lower and where we want to restrict that antlerless take. There were 31 deer permit areas that were classified as that antlerless permit lottery designation, both before and after the change. So we needed them to have that same designation so we could look at the effect of the change on deer harvest. So I know this graph is a little bit confusing. All of the gray lines represented on this graph represent one of those 31 deer permit areas and the antlerless harvests both before and after the change. And then the green line represents the average of all those together. So you can see, based on that line, we didn't see an increase in antlerless take in lottery deer permit areas that we could attribute to the crossbow expansion. Certainly, this is going to be something we want to continue to watch, as we could expect more hunters to partake in archery deer season. We want to watch that closely, but certainly if we need to adjust antlerless permits or adjust the regulations, we have that ability to do so. Based on the male survey, we also found virtually no difference between success rates, wounding rates, and hunter efforts. They were similar. There were some minor differences, but they were similar between crossbow and vertical bow users. We did ask what percentage of hunters actually participated specifically because of the change allowing crossbows, and found that 11% of hunters were specifically began participating in the archery deer season due to this change. 62% of crossbow users are more likely to continue deer hunting because of crossbows having been made legal for all. This is my one slide on turkey, and I won't go into too much detail here. We found pretty much similar effects on the turkey population as we did with deer. Nothing very concerning. With turkey, you do have to choose whether you want to participate in archery or firearms. You don't get to participate in both. Because the archery turkey season, it's much longer than the firearms turkey season, we were wondering whether more hunters would decide they want to participate in archery season, but apparently it's still more fun to take a turkey with a shotgun than a crossbow, because we did not see any significant shift into archery turkey, at least at this point, 2 years in. I do also want to point out that, and this is across the board, it's also true for deer archery hunters, it is a pretty divisive issue and polarizing issue amongst archery hunters. And not surprisingly, found that attitudes towards crossbows are more favorable among crossbow users and least favorable among vertical bow users. The results are all in there on the opinions, but it does tend to be a pretty divisive issue. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions if you have any. Thank you.
So members, we have decided that we should probably more thoroughly discuss this particular topic today. And even though we went long on the first, we're going to adjust the agenda so that testifiers and members all have enough time. And we're going to be rescheduling the school trust land discussion. Just wanted to let you all know. We have, as I mentioned, testifiers, and we can start with, I think it's Nick. And we're probably going to keep public testimony to about 5 minutes, so if you could kind of target that number, that'd be great. Go ahead, introduce yourself for the record, and proceed.
Yep. Thank you, Chair Heinzman and Chair Fisher. My name is Nick Omnrud. I'm the president of Minnesota Bow Hunters. You should all have a copy of our petition. We have over 1,000 Minnesota hunters who are against full crossbow inclusion. That is just for having some sort of a compromise where we're not looking at total complete inclusion or fully returning back to 60 plus and disability permits, which is what would happen if this was allowed to expire. We do strongly oppose full crossbow inclusion. If you look at the data from the DNR report, we do see an increase in youth participation during the archery season. It is important to remember that we're not actually adding new hunters. Those kids and a lot of those women that we see the biggest increases in, they are already hunting during the firearm or muzzleloader seasons. They are now just also hunting during the archery season. Is that a net gain? We would argue it's not a net gain. So crossbows do represent a clear separation from user-drawn and held archery equipment. Once loaded, the shot process is nearly identical to that of a shotgun or a rifle. Based on data from other states, we are likely to see the majority of bow hunters leave archery in favor of a lower effort and more advantageous crossbow. This notable decline in archers is expected to have a lasting negative participation impact on archery clubs and whole family community events centered around archery. We do have about 1,500 youth participating in the National Archery in Schools program in Minnesota, and another 450 youth archers in 4-H archery, a couple hundred more in archery clubs. So archery is a great sport for the entire family. It just simply is. States with crossbow archery seasons are seeing significantly increased archery season license sales, but the total number of individual hunters and overall deer harvest in states like Wisconsin continues to decline. We recently saw that Michigan has lost 30% of their hunters in the past 30 years, and they have had full crossbow inclusion for half of that since 2009. This is not the R3 solution it is marketed to be. This substantial projected increase in pre-firearm season harvest is going to have a negative impact on firearm season opportunity. And the absolute best weapon for a youth to deer hunt with is a rifle. Having crossbows in the archery season is going to increase harvest directly before the firearm season, and that is going to limit the opportunity for firearm hunters and those same youth that are using a rifle during the firearm season. We have seen higher participation among youth and adult hunters in the past when technology, online resources, and gear options were substantially worse. Overall hunter recruitment and retention is not an archery season weapon allowance issue, but we do have existing seasons for far easier and more advantageous weapon categories. A simple shift of harvest toward the archery season does not appear to be a management benefit. It certainly isn't one that outweighs the negative impacts of archery, bow hunter opportunity, and overall access issues. The biggest issue we're seeing is people don't have a quality place to hunt. Land is expensive. Leasing is incredibly expensive. If we take, let's say we double the archery season license sales, that is going to have a negative impact on opportunity. We can't just put a whole, we can't drastically increase participation and not expect them to have some crowding issues and a more negative experience because of that.
1 minute.
So we respectfully ask that you preserve archery seasons for archery and consider a compromise. Thank you for your time. I'll be around.
Thank you for your testimony. We really do appreciate hearing each side of this. Up next is Darren Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Darren Lee with Flaherty and Hood, and I'm here today representing the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association. You do have a letter from us in your folder, but I also have just a few brief comments here. On behalf of the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, I respectfully urge you to support the continued full inclusion of crossbows during archery season in Minnesota. This policy is about fairness, access, and conservation. Crossbows allow more Minnesotans to participate in archery hunting, including older hunters, those with physical limitations, and new hunters entering our tradition. These individuals are not asking for an advantage. They are asking for the opportunity to remain engaged. Participation is the foundation of conservation. Every licensed hunter directly supports habitat, wildlife management, and conservation funding through the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. Policies that keep hunters involved strengthen both our deer herd and our conservation model. Crossbows do not replace skill or ethical hunting. They remain short-range tools that require preparation, discipline, and respect for the resource. What they do ensure is that more Minnesotans can continue contributing to our conservation legacy. Protecting crossbow inclusion increases hunter participation, conservation funding, and the future of hunting in our state. Thank you again for the opportunity.
Thank you for your testimony. Thank you to DNR. I really appreciated the presentation today. The report was excellent. I think it really helps us have data to guide the discussion. With that, I'll just open it up for questions. Representative Jordan, you're first on the list.
Oh, I had questions about school trust lands, but no. You know, I understand the concern about losing that heritage around traditional archery. You know, we hear a lot of great stories about fishing with your dad or your grandpa, but I grew up shooting bows and arrows with my brother and my dad, and we made our own bow. My brother and I would make our own bows and arrows and get in trouble that way. And I really see crossbows as a way to continue that tradition of hunting and angling. You know, I just really do think that this is where the growth in the sport is. You know, I've sat in this committee for a number of years, and I love this committee, but we talk about our concern around losing growth in hunting and fishing. And if we don't start to adapt to where people want to take game in a legal and ethical manner, I don't see any, you know, I remember reading in Hunter Safety, The Art of Fair Chase, and I don't see crossbow as part of that. I see crossbow as a way to grow and get more people, and people like me who loved archery. I mean, I would even write little book reports about archery books, and it was really kind of my weird nerdy thing, which I think is a shock to people around this table. But and I see books like The Hunger Games really making girls and kids interested in archery, and I think crossbow is the way that we're growing that. It's an addition, not necessarily a way to take away from that tradition. And it's, you know, one that making, you know, shooting compound bows or even making traditional bows like we see on like shows like Alone, this is just another way to do that. And I don't see any real, this is how the sport is growing, and we need to accommodate that. I'm sure there are ways we could talk about how that, any kind of legislation going forward should look. And I think it's good to have those conversations, but I think anytime we're talking about archery and how to get more people involved in it, that's a good thing. And I think the ways we've experimented with crossbow has been a good thing these past couple years.
Thank you for that. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Chair Heinzman, and thank you for the report today. And I was expecting the report to look much like what it is, and I think it, you know, shows that what we want to see is opportunity, just like Representative Jordan has so eloquent. I think we all learned something about you today about making your own bow and whatever, and I think it's an opportunity. You know, it's really giving opportunity. And I was going to give Representative Sludzinski a hard time when he was here earlier. Need to redefine success, because you know, sometimes when we, you know, oftentimes we think of, you know, harvest as being the success, but I was going to give him a hard time, but I said it not to about that. You know, we just need to make sure we got a good picture and of a sunset, because that's what my wife likes to do when I bring home a picture of a sunset and not of an animal. But it's you know, but it really is about enjoying the outdoors, spending time with family or whatever it is, or putting food on your table. And I think it's just another tool that I think it gives that opportunity. And whether it gets a young person out, I think I was probably most surprised in the report that I think it showed that girls were the ones that were the ones that had the highest increase, I think. I know my son this year, he turned 10. He was excited because he was finally able to get the hunt big game in Minnesota. And he wanted to hunt with archery. And I don't know if Minnesota still has the 40-pound limit, but he wasn't sure if he was going to be able to draw back at 40 pounds. And so he was asking me, do you think we could talk to Grandpa and use his crossbow if I can't pull back 40 pounds? Well, he was able to get 40 pounds by hunting season, so he was really proud of that and excited to be able to use a vertical bow. But at the same time, he had that option of having a crossbow if he needed it, and it was just a fun time that we were able to spend outdoors and you know, making memories, but most of all, it's introducing people to the sport. And I think that's really what we're going to see. And I would expect that some of these youth that are joining in that might not be able to draw the 40-pound weight, that when they get there, they probably will use a vertical bow until maybe later in their years. I've got some friends that the 60-pound bow is too much for them now, and now they're having to decrease it. And it's kind of a blow on their ego, and so they're looking at, well, maybe instead of giving up or decreasing, you know, or quitting completely, maybe having that time with their grandkids with a crossbow out in the woods is having that opportunity. So thank you for this, and I think it does lead to more conversation. So thank you.
Representative Jacob.
Thank you, Chair Heinzman. And I guess for me, more comment than question. If there was a shortage of deer, I might look at this differently. But as a farmer with deer depredation issues, I mean real deer depredation issues, I've seen as many as 70 deer roaming across my field at one time. And I had one field in particular where the deer got 90% of that corn crop. So I don't care if we're expanding rifle usage, if we're expanding crossbow usage, I don't care how we expand it, I just want them gone.
members. Let's be careful now. Representative Warwas.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for that presentation. I was listening to it, and I was seeing this. We talk about percentages of increase in various parts of these harvesting statistics, and I saw the crossbow harvest, 64% of deer harvested by female archery hunters was a real interesting number to me. But what I really want to know is, what does that mean in actual numbers of animals? 64%, what does that look like in actual numbers?
Go ahead.
Chair Representative Warwas, I can get those numbers to you directly. I don't know off the top of my head. We typically, for archery season, I believe it's in here, we have around 100,000 archery hunters, and I think we typically harvest just under 30,000 deer. So I don't know how many of those were due to female archery hunters, but I can look up that number.
Okay, Representative, Chair, thank you. Appreciate that.
I had a question, if it's okay, since we're at the end of the list. We talked in the previous presentation, the bill presentation, about hooking mortality. I don't think that the study looks at the differences between vertical archery and crossbows in terms of the numbers of deer wounded versus taken. But you might have a comment that I just wanted to give you a chance if you had any information on that.
Thanks, Chair. We did look at the difference in wounding rates between the two weapon types and found that they were essentially the same. So we're not expecting with the expansion of crossbows that we would have more wounded deer. And I believe we saw the same wounding rate with firearms that we did with crossbows. So we're not anticipating that with the expansion of crossbows, we will have more wounded deer and less higher deer mortality than we would otherwise.
No, I appreciate that. It just is something that I know that I'm going to get a question back home. Is there a difference? Is there potentially a greater? And there had been some predictions that folks would be taking shots that they otherwise shouldn't be. So it's good to know that that wasn't an issue that you found in your study and your research. So. Not seeing any more questions, members. Oh, no, you don't even, Representative Falconer, by all means, we have extra time.
I know. would Representative Nelson be open to a question?
I think Representative Nelson would be fine with that.
Okay, you're kind of leaving us on the cliff edge here. What did success look like for your 10-year-old? Was it a sunset or was it an animal?
Nelson.
Inquiring minds need to know.
So, sunset or animal?
Well, for myself, it was sunset pictures this year. So for Zeb, it was not a sunset. It was he was successful this year. So
congrats, good job.
That probably makes me happier than harvesting one myself.
100%.
Before we go, members, I would mention that you should put the school trust lands presentation in your save folder. So that's there the next time. Have a very nice Thursday. We are adjourned.